going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, it stands to reason that it's time for another episode of WTF Prime Time! Joining me once again is Aaron.
Yes, he is. Feeling good.
Are you?
Yeah, I got a phone call about the job interview I've been waiting on forever.
Excellent.
This is the job that will be right up my proverbial alley over, you know, the jobs that are hours away. Yeah, hour away.
Yeah. Good to hear. It also stands to reason that we're joined by Omega's Prime.
I'm so sick of that line.
And as it stands to reason, yes.
Logically,
it stands to reason, Beast Hunters, that it's time for us to talk about a couple episodes that there's a programming break. So we took a programming break. And then all of a sudden, two episodes had aired, and I was like, oh! So I'm calling this one Project Predit Chain of Command, because we're going to talk about Project Predacon, and we're going to talk about Chain of Command.
Kind of works. They happen congruently.
Yeah.
And potentially the next episode as well.
I haven't looked up anything on the next one.
The teaser at the end of Chain of Command had RC in it, and she wasn't in either of the other two fights, so... There you go. And had, like, Fowler in June. And
if they're going to call back to a thing they've done before, the whole congruent episodes thing is the one thing I'd say do again, because I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about Project Predacon. And I'm going to rely on you guys a little bit for the sake of remembering what's in what, because I kind of watched them back to back, and they're kind of mushing in my head.
I just did as well. However, I have two different pages of notes, so that's how I keep it separate.
Yeah, well, I don't have two pieces of paper because I am not destroying the environment.
I have no pieces of paper.
Oh, look at you. What are you going to do when your notepad crashes, mister?
Open it back up again?
Take photos and share amusingly. We're sorry. Notepad has caused a critical error and must shut down.
It crashed. You can't take photos with it if it crashed. That's...
Pfft. No, the error window needs to come up. Like, your computer literally can't handle Notepad right now.
Hey, look, I've gotten error messages before that were just the exclamation point, so. Yeah.
This is the computer blindly panicking.
It's the computer going, that's talking so much about Prime.
So, I'm going to open up with the real hot-button topic of Project Predacon. So Optimus Prime was kind of like the source of saying it stands to reason and Beast Hunters in that episode. And I actually don't really have much to expand upon except that totally stuck out to me. And I was like, oh man, the corn. I'm getting hit in the eye with kernels of corn coming out of this dialogue. I can feel the sticky note that was attached to the script that said, put the word Beast Hunters in here.
Yeah.
So you know what? At least Peter Cullen's performance of Optimus Prime has been so, what's the word I'm looking for? The positive version. It's been so unwavering.
Consistent.
Consistent, yes. That's the one I wanted. That it didn't stick out too much, but I thought it was funny. I was amused. Has the Prime form kind of run off with that whole thing?
Not that, really.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess, Aaron, I'm going to leave it up to you to tell me about the first big topic, perhaps something the Prime Forum ran off with, perhaps something you just want to talk about yourself.
Is Prime the first Autobot alt mode we've had in a while now that appears to have severe offensive capabilities?
You mean like in terms of like actual weaponry?
Yeah.
I want to say yes.
Because his Mask Division alt mode...
That was beautiful.
Yeah, I love
right
that.
Off the bat, I got a squee and then had to, Alfie kind of missed it. And I'm like, no, mask. She's like, what? And then we both had a little bit of a squee and hit play again.
So Fowler's kind of the generator of the non-Transformer references now between that and the Sky Strikers.
The Sky Strike. Well, I mean, his door has Unit E on it, and they are in Hangar E, which very well may be the fifth hangar on the base, or it could be that they are part of Unit E, but yeah, calling out Mass Division, and it's this all-terrain ruggedized expedition vehicle thing that makes his alt mode. But yeah, that was something that I sat there and head scratched over, because you'd have to. I can't even think of another Prime, because animated, and he had a water cannon.
Yeah, he had the water cannons.
And that could be used offensively, but it wasn't just like missile pack, which he used up against the Insecticons pretty well. And then did a showy transform and blasted a hole clean through another one.
Yeah, I kind of liked... I mean, it's a little toy commercially, but I like that, you know, to go with his new body and his new alt mode, he got to do a little bit of transforming and fighting stuff. Because it felt like it was just long enough for my recollections. Like, he just kind of went in there, kicked some butt. And I like the conceit of giving him that crazy alt mode, because I was thinking to myself they were just going to say, like, well, it was the Forge. Yeah. And I appreciate that he went through the trouble of scanning a new alt mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though parts from this mask vehicle already appeared to be on his body.
Besides the shifty eyes.
Pieces of the jetpack on the back of the mask vehicle made me smirk, because I was like, all right, the transparency here is clear, and I am willing to just nod and accept it.
Yeah. I think it would have been interesting had they tweaked his model a little bit after the scan. To be like, oh, this is the thing now. But whatever.
Thank you for finding a truck that perfectly matched the windows in my chest.
That always
gets kind of... It's a little too convenient when that happens. That does kind of bug me. But I kind of understand, well, these are kind of expensive models. I wouldn't mind just... Okay, I wouldn't have minded just like a little deviation in the truck, or at least throw a tarp over the back.
Yeah,
you know, not that hard to just make it kind of look like a different vehicle.
I mean, not for good reasons, but I am kind of tickled by how like obscenely obvious that whole sequence is. it's kind of like I guess it's not the same, but it's like when you know the jets get scanned, and it's like, oh, that's the jet that has a whole lot in common with the chest of that jet transformer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not terribly broken up by it, but it would have been at least a little bit of a nod to the fact. Oh, yeah. Not a deal breaker by any stretch of the imagination. Just would have been nice to have the idea that scanning does something for real.
Hmm. I don't know if I have anything else to add to that myself.
I think what more amused me about Prime getting his new alt mode is that he's still flying around without any attempt to disguise whatsoever.
I was really hoping when he flew in that it was going to be his alt mode, but with wings sticking out the side. Because he can do that with the toy, and I was, for one second, I was like, oh, is he gonna, aw. Because I was like, you said mask, and you're pushing it this far. Yeah. Just flying truck. Just do it.
Have a dude with a funny helmet come out.
I mean, and the flying truck is also a big part of the Galaxy Convoy homage. Because Galaxy Convoy had his flight mode, which was literally a fire truck with wings sticking off the side, which also looked hilarious.
The flying Winnebago mode. I remember that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a little. I think that's what would have pushed it a little bit too much. Just Prime flying around. I am now perfectly disguised, and just Big Mac truck flying over people's heads.
No one will notice this.
Scrapes a rooftop. You know, the tiling from the roof just flies everywhere, and he just does not care anymore.
What's the big deal? The truck I scanned had wings. This should be normal.
He suffered brain death for a couple minutes, like an episode or two ago, and that, you know, it left some damage. There was.
Between that and the amnesia from last season, yeah.
Like honestly, like, yeah, this Prime has. He's gone through legitimate brain death, and I you know, that leaves marks. Yeah. There was no cyber oxygen getting to his cyber nucleic acid, and. I just watched all those episodes with Kryn, and it was so funny seeing her face upon hearing the words cybernucleic acid.
Yeah.
And then when she saw the image of the chain of cybernucleic acid, she was like, "You can't do that!" I was like, "No, you can. It's cybernetic. It's fine." Yeah. Optimus Prime, scanning for good times. And I also want to mention, because this came up after our last Prime time, but someone, I forgot if it was on the thread or on Twitter, pointed out a really cool Tumblr post that, because I'd mentioned with Prime's new body, I was worried about clipping, and I was worried about just how tree trunk he was. And if you frame by frame through that part where he flew in episode 4 and, you know, like, wrecked havoc and punched Megatron through a throne and whatnot, the animators actually took great care to get across, like, his attempts to deal with his far greater forward momentum upon landing.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that in the show.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I saw that thing after we talked about it somewhere. I thought it was after the podcast. And I was like, you're right. My fears of clipping, at least in that episode, you know, were pretty much alleviated, because clearly the animators, who are pretty good, are good enough to continue being good and paying attention to the new borders of his hitbox. Moving on from there, Omegas Prime, how about you give us a talking point?
We kind of set the tone of the season with, as Starscream put it, another scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Which I love that they actually worked it into one of the characters going, "What, again?"
Yeah,
really.
I saw some discussion about that line, and the way I'm taking it is that that's the writers letting us know that regardless of how things go, like, no matter where that line takes us, at least they're saying, like, "Hey, guys, look, we know."
Yeah.
And even if we can't do anything about it, we're going to say something this time.
Yeah, that's, I totally took it as the writer pausing, turning and looking at the camera, sighing, nodding, "Let's get on with this then, at least."
Yeah. It was cute. I mean, hopefully, up until Predacons Rising, it's not going to be another, like, season-long scavenger hunt, but that little nod was good.
So far, what I've seen of, what we've seen of the season so far, it's not really coming off like a scavenger hunt like the previous one was, because, you know, according to Shockwave, they're all tagged anyway. So it's just, okay, where are they? Fly right there.
Yeah.
Well, the problem's still going to be the Autobots are going to be then chasing after the Decepticons. So
it's
going to be very similar.
It's going to be similar. There's, you do have the subtle changes to it where the Autobots don't really have a stake in the item itself. You know, they could blow it up for all they care.
Mm-hmm.
So you have different goals in mind here, and, well, this is the first time in a while I can remember where this episode where the Decepticons cleanly win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the, and that's just how the season has to go, because they have to build that Predacon army we're supposed to get at the end of the season. So it's gonna, I feel like it's gonna be a little bit different between our new, more dismal surroundings. Mm-hmm. Our Autobots struggling more than they have in the past. Plus the fact that the Decepticons kind of have to come out on top a lot to build up to the finale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like, I mean, right now at least, because I've also not been watching a lot of the previews and things, but I kind of like this, you know, and throw in your cynicism based on the last season as you will, but I like this little bit of uncertainty I have of, like, I don't actually know what any more Predacons will be, in part thanks to the toy line taking this complete left turn. The toy line is no longer an indicator to me of anything, because it's like, and as soon as Smokescreen, I mean, this is kind of a side point, so I don't think it's really a whole talking point, but, you know, him getting the color scheme of his Cyberverse redeco that came with that ship.
Yeah.
I was like, I literally don't know what's a clue anymore. Because you put spikes on everything, I don't know anymore, and I'm kind of happy about that. Because now I'm not watching it going like, well, I know if they're going to get this one because we've already accounted for this many of the Predacons. Because, right. I mean, like, the Abominus guys probably aren't going to show up. But who knows? Maybe they will.
No. Some of the artwork had two-headed dragons.
I know, but I mean, that was the 2D artwork, so that...
But that, yeah, that was flashback time, and they may end up with some of that, but I don't think that we're going to see all of a sudden, out of nowhere, in the final moments of the season, oh, wait a second, here's a combiner, and the Autobots have no way to deal with it.
We had Unicron already.
Right, but Unicron is such a giant threat that it flips around the other way. Whereas that is something that would be, I don't see them pulling that off unless they change the way that everything goes in the next two or three episodes after what we've seen. Because this is a 13-episode season and we're through six.
I keep wanting to say things based on the length of the season, but
yeah,
I don't feel like, after season two, I feel like things could go really well or they could go real bad, like in terms of the pacing and the layout of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's going to be like a big mess or anything, but I don't think I can like just say like, oh, it won't be a mess. I'm keeping a very careful little cynicism in my pocket over here. I guess like a good place to flow from that, because you guys mentioned the whole thing with the Decepticons winning, is that that whole battle for the, was it like a tooth? Or it was more than a tooth.
Jaw.
Yeah, the tooth is what he got.
The second episode was the jaw, and Megatron got a tooth.
No, that one. This one was the jaw. Yeah, this one was the jaw, next one's an eye.
Yeah, the next one was the eyeball.
What was the skull then?
The skull was
the very beginning of the episode.
The skull's what Prime found when he first broke up the excavation.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I kept looking at all these things and trying to figure out like if they are actually based on any of the existing Predacon figure designs we've seen. Yeah. Which I think is a real big folly, especially once we got to the eyeball. Because like, okay. Sorry. Never mind. But yeah, that whole fight sequence and the kind of like mounted, the escalating levels of how much of this thing is getting ripped apart and how much can Shockwave still adequately try to catch. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a cool action sequence. I was actually kind of sitting there going, my cynicism was in full drive, and I was like, yep, they're going to get everything and Shockwave's going to come back empty handed and the Autobots don't know what to do with any of that stuff. So they'll collect all the fossils and the Decepticons will get it because Starscream will steal it or something. And then they all got shot in the foot. So I was like, okay, cool. It feels like the show is kind of like playing to me, because me, outside of any care I have for any of the characters, is like, let the Decepticons get all the fossils so they can make all the toys, because I want to see those toys walking around in that computer animation. That's kind of like my real selfish ulterior motive. And I felt like the show, just for at least a brief moment, was kind of like, hey, I agree. But yeah, aside from that fight sequence, and I guess bearing in mind a chain of command, since we're talking about both, like, where do you guys see this, like, this fossil thing going? Like, do you think we're going to see more of it after the next episode? Or...
I don't know. I think it'd have to be a darn quick turnover. Just because knowing that it's a short season and the end, you'd think that they'd have to have, like, the next episode after shows them growing, and then the one after that is them all overrunning and the Autobots doing whatever they have to do to fight back as beast hunters. Because otherwise they would have built it up, because they knew, we've seen something that said that they knew that this was the end before their last episode, right?
Yeah. That this was like, that, yeah, they wrote the last episode knowing that there was no stuff to come afterwards.
Yeah. So hopefully that means that they could at least write it to an end, or a appropriate, and here's where we go from here type of, and now we're getting everything off of Earth and out into the stars, so that it's at least a happy place to end.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that the actual cloning process, like, I this is getting a little bit far ahead speculative, but it's something that's on my mind. It's like, are we going to have like one or even two episodes of just vats of goo coalescing, or are we just going to pop into a cold open of like, the first one is done?
I my hope is that they pop into the cold opening of, here's your bouncing baby Redicon.
I'm kind of that mindset as well. Like, I liked the slow build stuff in previous seasons, but right now, with that experience, I just want to see this thing get on the ball and just show me stuff. Just throw me new toys. Throw me new CG. Mm-hmm. Omegas, what about you? Where do you see this fossil hunt going?
It is really tough. I mean, in a way, I almost want to see Abominus, if only because it means we don't have that many fossils to go.
Oh, I want to see Abominus. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I just don't think we will.
I know, but it almost seems like the faster path now. You know, it is really hard to tell. I mean, part of me just wants to think, well, you know, it's going to be a bone hunt up until, like, we actually get to Predacon's rising. You know, which would seem like a really abrupt end, you know, to have that many Predacons introduced so late. But at the same time, I hate to say it, that's kind of the flow the writers go for in these episodes.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't think... I really feel, seeing the way that they're like, another scavenger hunt, makes me think that the writers aren't writing these, that a producer or somebody up the line is like, hey, my kid really liked that type of show, Pokemon, right? We can make some of those, right? Because if you look at the difference with the first season to here, it changes enough that it's hard to see the writers, right, saying, let's basically write the same episode but have a different thing they're hunting for, and away we go.
You know what I just realized the Transformers Prime was? It's Jackie Chan Adventures.
Because
the first scavenger hunt they go after in that show is the talismans. But after that, they're going for spirit animals. The next season, it's masks. The next season, it's cursed items. And the talismans that were so important before are just things they pass around from then on out. And that's exactly what we've got with the Iacon relics now.
I never saw all of Jackie Chan Adventures, so the analogy is somewhat lost on me. But that's not anyone's fault but my own.
And you should feel thusly ashamed.
I just never could make time for it. It looked like a cool show, and I know that it led to stuff like, you know, that He-Man cartoon. I don't know. this is my own ignorance playing in. My apologies to the Jackie Chan Adventures fandom for my lack of knowledge about your fine piece of media. I mostly remember people spin things, and real-life Jackie Chan would show up in the end credits and say stuff. Am I at least right with that part?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. But if the parallel is there, then that is awesome. Hopefully. This is like dropping like an aerators parallel on me. Like, yeah, aerators. Yeah. I got it. Anyway.
It keeps you on your toes. That's what's important.
Man, I loved Air Raiders. All the air they raided.
Isn't that the plot of Spaceballs?
Yeah, Air Raiders the movie, Spaceballs. Sure. That's why they say the Transformers thing in that. It all connects together. What are we doing? Transformers Prime! Aaron, give us another talking point before I start talking more about Air Raiders.
We kind of did the logically bit. I'm running through my thing.
I will agree that the logically went from cute to okay.
Yeah, totally logically. I will be able to extract. Well, no, and then there was a place where logically would have been better off. I forget what the line was after that, but like two lines later, it was a much better place to drop the word logic or logically, and instead it was whatever. But Smokescreens, just through this episode, had the whole maybe I should have been Prime type of deal, where I don't know if it's just Ultra Magnus being this version of Ultra Magnus I'm liking slightly less, and especially more in Chain of Command. But, you know, his whole, oh, I thought I'd, you know, change color scheme and, you know, robots in disguise, and actually puts him a little bit closer to his G1 color scheme. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think, you know, I could have been a Prime, but instead I'm being treated like a stupid rookie. But then having the good realization with Bumblebee about how, you know, Bumblebee's apparently, due to Smokescreen's translation of Bleep Bleep Bloop, all right, being where he is and he does his job well, so you should, like, find your place and be happy with it type of thing.
There's something I always find weird when someone who isn't Raff starts doing the Raff thing of repeating everything Bumblebee says before answering him.
Yeah.
Which makes me go, like, do you guys actually understand him, or can you only, like, kind of understand him and you have to sound it out in order to yeah, to reply?
That might be it, too. Wait, was that beep, beep, bloop, or beep, bloop, beep?
I still want the punchline to be beep, boop, that no one actually can understand him, and Bumblebee's just getting increasingly angry as the show goes on.
With subtitles, it would be nothing but profanities and graphic demonstrations of what he would do to his proto-chamber.
That's why he changed his paint job to the Cyberfire paint job. He's getting pushed.
He's going dark and going blue.
That's right. By the way, because I'm sure someone will bring it up in the thread, Smokescreen's new color scheme is also very reminiscent of a Binaltech color scheme that Binaltech Smokescreen had.
Mm-hmm.
We know that.
It's got the same door number too, right?
One of the same door numbers,
of the same, yeah, because...
Yeah. Because he had...
There were, like, four of them.
Four, it was seven, or eight, then seven, then one, then two, or something?
Yeah. I believe it was one. The one and two, it might have been zero, then one, or it was one and two.
No, it was one, then two, because their door numbers were something like last year's placings in the rally.
Oh, okay.
If my horrible memory serves, which occasionally it does.
I'm resisting the urge to go and Google it. I don't have much to say about Ultra Magnus in this episode. I have much more to say in Chain of Command, but I'm kind of liking. I mean, I wish there was more of him still. I like the Smokescreen we get, but I still sort of wish that this last season of Prime would turn into the Smokescreen season.
Yeah. Well, it seems like everybody else has kind of stopped a bit of development, and it's Smokescreen's a place where, you know, we don't know everything about him. It's a good place to have something grow and change.
Mm-hmm. Right. You do get to see a little bit of it, where he's trying to learn a little patience from Bumblebee. So there's still room for growth in him.
Mm-hmm.
I do like those small attempts to just kind of grow up a little bit here. Well, you know, my paint job isn't as flashy anymore, or...
Although that is his attempt to grow up, it's like, dude, that's a pittance. That's like, I'm going to take down my Motley Crue poster, and I'm going to put up a community poster.
He's trying. Give the poor boy credit.
I'm going to get rid of my DVDs of Monty Python and purchase the Blu-rays of Breaking Bad. I'm growing up.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of TV shows on my mind these days between Twitter and me. It's become like my favorite analogy now. And I haven't even watched most of them. Guess what? I don't even know what Arrested Development is. I said it. I can fix it any time, but I kind of like living in my ignorance bubble.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be three.
All right, so we're the last three people on the internet who don't know what Arrested Development is. Excellent.
High five.
Yay!
Hooray, isolation.
Let's move on from there. Omegas, what's another point from Project Predacon you'd like to bring up?
Staying in this, well, we kind of touch on that. I might go back to that later. We kind of touched on some of the name drops in that first scene, but there were, oh my God. It's like they had a budget for like all the references we could get in and all the little quips for the season. Yeah. And they decided, okay, just throw them all in the first scene at the same time. Cause okay, the mask thing was cool. And then, you know, because we saw it in all the commercials, Bulkhead drops Beast Wars as a reference.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of references beyond beyond the jokey ones.
Yeah, the one that intrigued me was that apparently Dinobots are a thing.
Yeah, totally different though.
Oh, they are totally a thing because apparently they're a thing in the comic books that I haven't read.
Yes, so, the Beast Hunters came out today.
Yeah. Yeah, number like the follow up to Rise of the Dinobots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in my comic bag downstairs I haven't gotten a chance to look at.
No, when you mention Mask and Beast Wars, there's a fanboy in me who goes, that's kind of nice to hear. When you mention Dinobots and say, no, that's that's a totally different thing. That same fanboy goes, that's a thing? Then where are they?
You know, they're just over there where Rat Trap's Aunt RC is. They're in the world of throwaway reference line that probably isn't supposed to be world building, but we'll find a way.
It's just the middle. That's like the writer's giving me a middle finger. It's just like, you know, there are Dinobots. You're just never going to see them.
Oh, no, they're in a comic book. They live. I read the four pages of the new issue from today on the Facebook page. They're in a comic book. Grimlock has a chair, and I didn't read the dialogue, but everyone had real non-prime faces. But it's the Beast Hunters comic.
Yeah.
No, actually, the quip I like most is because of who said it was the one Optimus got in.
Hmm.
Because Fowler made the comment, okay, we found a bone in Scotland, bring your kilts.
Oh, yeah.
It's a kilt. I don't know.
Oh, yes, that was good.
Agent Fowler can sometimes be oblique, I just find it easier to nod and mobilize.
Right.
The use of the word mobilize in that was great, because it felt like an acknowledgement of the very stilted speech pattern of Optimus Prime in the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just love that we get a little moment of levity from Optimus.
And Ultra Magnus.
Yeah.
Well, Magnus is just asking a question. You know, Prime is actually kind of... You know, Prime's the one getting in the little quip.
Well, I like how he gets the quip in, but he's clearly not trying to make a quip.
Right.
That's, like, yeah. it's giving me this little just momentary insight into the private relationship and communication between Optimus and Ultra Magnus that they might have had back in the war. These two dudes who are the stick up the butt. And one of them is just a little bit more relaxed. They use words like mobilize in actual conversation.
See, now it just got me wondering how much really has gone over Prime's head throughout this entire series. And he's just gone, you're moving on.
It's not his fault. It's the multiple brain deaths he keeps suffering.
Right.
All that oxygen not getting into his cybernucleic acid. Which, by the way, I wish they would just keep saying in full, because CNA sounds awkward to say.
Cybernucleic acid.
Cybernucleic acid.
No, CNA sounds like a TV channel.
Cybernucleic acid. It's science. Look it up.
It's science-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just take the helix, make everything rectangles. It's fine. Trying to think of anything. I'm taking a quick flip through here to see if I'm forgetting anything else that I really liked in this episode. There's lots of little animation bits I enjoyed. Like I mentioned, the fight scene. There was cool stuff like the downside to having a huge cable hanging off of one of your arms. It's an easy thing to grab.
Yeah, that fight scene was real good, even though Soundwave got away with a cheat of horizontal ground bridge to get the tooth.
he pulled some playing the portal stuff.
Yeah.
I want to know how the gravity worked there. Like if that was flying forward through the ground bridge, it was flying horizontally with momentum and then dropped, then it should have hit Megatron's hand a whole lot harder.
Well, right? he has a metal robot hand.
I know, but there should have been a louder clang or something. It would have been great if it just went through his hand and embedded in the floor.
Well, here it is. Oh, no, that wouldn't work by physics either.
The physics of this show about giant alien robots makes no sense.
I played a whole lot of Portal 2, all right? I played it for like 8 hours.
So did I, but I'm not questioning this.
That's a whole lot.
You know how far Chell can fly with two little springs attached to her ankles?
Well, as long as you're on the right color gel, you know.
Yeah.
I like the beginning of that fight scene better when they're in the oil field.
Yeah.
There was a lot to play with there that went really well.
That was very good, very dynamic fight scene. I guess you brought up Jackie Chan before, which might be why it dropped in my head, but kind of the Jackie Chan moment of smokescreen throws the one into the oil rig and the one Viacon into the oil rig. And as he's sitting there kind of head clearing, he point at the Derek coming back down and clobbers him.
Yeah. He points up. So the Viacon looks up and then you get the point of view as it coming down and cracks the camera lens.
It was like, oh, that's just fun choreography.
That's our little Looney Tunes moment, and I love that one.
In general, the
short of having little Tweety birds around
right.
the head.
Yeah. The quality of the animation by season three, when I was rewatching the first four episodes the other weekend, it was it's really clear, I think, in this season that these dudes have been at this now for a couple years. Like just the... The smoothness, the creativity, and the direction. Like, no matter how up or down the story goes, I just get so many juicy visuals. And Starscream, especially. Mm-hmm. He is so emotive now. I feel like there just must be one guy on the team who has been the Starscream animator, or at least the lead one, because it feels like someone who loves that model and who has been animating that model for years is now working that model. Like, he's almost more expressive than everyone else to a detriment. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else in Project Predacon that I wanted to talk about? We covered most of my stuff.
Synthen gets a tag.
Synthen.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. A little tiny throwback.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll see it again.
So, well, it definitely, the way it was done definitely makes me think it's going to be something else that gets brought up because it was, you know, our limited resources. Although I thought they had the same resources as before, but maybe something else has come up.
Remember, they blew up the original base where, you know, we had a whole episode where they're really low on energon supplies and then they got a whole big stockpile of it. And now, that just got blown up. So we're back to square one.
Right, but it seems like it would be a similar task to just, you know, raid the existing mines or whatever, over being an issue to have to go to the synthetic. Because they had a bunch of empty cubes. I just wonder if they can do the old, you know, plug it into raw oil or whatever off of the old G1 cartoon. Just smash it, just step on it. It's like old soda cans, it'll compress it.
Let's get that nice neon purple glow. Well, shall we move on to Chain of Command? Or have you got any more bottom of the page notes we can drop here for Project Predacon?
That shows up more in Chain of Command. Ultra Magnus takes the Forge as a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a big Chain of Command thing.
Big hammer. Yeah. And then also that will affect Chain of Command is Wheeljack starts by cheesing off Ultra Magnus with some Wrecker behavior, finding their blast boom ball, but I forget the name of their
lobbin
fake.
The lobbin ball or whatever.
Lobbin, yeah, ball.
No one can say lob in a way that doesn't sound really weird and stilted. That's the thing I've noticed about the scripting whenever it comes up. But, I threw a good lob! And I'm like, no one says that. It sounds weird. That, I mean, you know, bearing in mind that it's supposed to be some kind of weird alien term. It always sounds... Yeah. It sounds like whenever I hear people trying too hard to use the word frack.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because lobbing is actually an English word. Yeah, I guess let's move on to Chain of Command. Let's open up with let's open up with some quick talk about that hammer action, because I like that a lot.
Yeah,
And I like the notion that in the last couple, like, I guess really thanks to Animated, I think Ultra Magnus with a hammer has become like a piece of ground in imagery. I think it's great, because before, yeah, Ultra Magnus's imagery was big shoulders and those doofy looking rockets on the sides of them,
and not being able to deal with things.
Yeah, now he's the guy who also has the big ass hammer, and that I mm-hmm. like that, because now he has like a nice offensive thing attached to him.
Yeah, aside from the missile launchers.
Well, I guess. I never thought of them as actual missile launchers, because if you launch the missiles, they lose their iconic imagery. That was like the catch 22 of the Ultra Magnus shoulder launchers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the use of the hammer in multiple ways was really cool, and I like that it's drained of energy, but yo, he can still just swing it hard enough to cause a shockwave.
It's still a big thumping stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop tweeting Noise Maze.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
There we go. Got our Noise Maze mention in to make up for that. Yeah. That's, yep. Aaron, give me a note that you have about Chain of Command.
I have an issue. Well, my question that I want to ask kind of jumps over some things that will develop in time. So I'll go to, kind of what I talked about before. I think I'm not as much of a fan of Ultra Magnus as I was before. Mm-hmm. It's more stick up his butt rather than kind of the rules lawyer type thing. Cause I like that IDW Magnus of he's just trying so hard to stick to the rules that are given. And this Ultra Magnus seems more like the stereotype of the officer just out of the academy that has no idea that what's really going on, trying to tell the 10-year in the thick of it veteran what's what.
Mm-hmm.
The specific thing was like Wheeljack's attempt to throw a grenade down Predaking, or the Predacons, so I don't think they've ever actually called him Predaking, down his gullet as a tactic being out of line. Any first cycle cadet would know not to do that. And it's like, well, you're in the middle of a battle. This thing is handing the three of you your butts. And here he's got a chance to throw a grenade down the thing's gullet that just got knocked away by luck or whatever. That would have been a death blow, you'd think, swallowing a high explosive grenade.
Yeah.
And to bust him for that instead of saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't have done that. You know, I see what you were trying to do there. It wasn't the best thing to do. Instead, it's dressing down like Wheeljack's been sitting on his hands the whole time and just decided to start throwing, you know, start spamming grenade launcher rather than like, hey, I had the high ground. Dude was roaring at me with big mouth action. I thought, hey, you know, I think that the IDW Magnus that I like would maybe have quoted the rules, but at least been, you know, in a battlefield act, you know, would have replied, however, in a battlefield action, blah, 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 blah.
Once they cleared up that there was history between those two specifically, that, mm-hmm. that made it made it less, I don't know the word to describe it. It made it more palatable to me, because it felt like,
yeah,
that was the extension of also the Ultra Magnus who had dealt with Wheeljack, like walking out on his own command, right, before. So this, I feel like, because I think the IDW Magnus is a bit more fun to watch, but I'm seeing this Ultra Magnus, for better or for worse, as being a little bit more of a Michael Bay style grizzled commander dude.
Still no, because right. I think the Michael Bay style would at least realize that, you know, war is hell, to use that quote, rather than war is a series of doctrines that come only out of this book in the specific order. Mm-hmm. That this Ultra right. Magnus is just becoming like I said, that, you know, guy straight out of the academy or whatever, rather than a dude that's realized, you know, war, you know, for a different adage, you know, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. You can have all the plan that you want, but as soon as this giant dragon thing decides to start coming down a tunnel, maybe things will change a little bit.
What got me about the dressing down part was it came off so, like, inappropriately timed.
Yeah.
Between the Predacon getting away with a fossil and given what happened just before, because, you know, Magnus and Bulkhead were down and out. You know, I felt like if that line went on just 2 seconds longer, Magnus would have ended it with, "I had him right where I wanted him."
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, I didn't really enjoy it that much, but the way I was able to process it was, this is an Ultra Magnus who is almost looking for a reason to get specifically on Wheeljack's case.
Right.
Which, to me, is kind of a weak way to write these two characters, because I think there's a way more interesting relationship that could be had. And maybe it's one that we'll see later on. Maybe this was just like this was a little bit of a haphazard attempt at writing it. But yeah, it was weird, especially with the Miko factor of her having just gone up where the dragon went.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, I don't know, like it felt like almost a bit of a false tension of like,
yeah,
you're telling me that Wheeljack and Ultra Magnus are going to have this argument when they are both completely aware that another character is currently in peril. They both show some or at least in Ultra Magnus's case, he's aware that there's some modicum of don't let them get killed.
Yeah. Well, and it's just something that, yeah, a dressing down like that is not a mid battlefield thing. That is a back at the base, you know, debrief of, you know, you shouldn't have been as dumb as you were, not in the middle of it. Or if he had screamed, "No, no, not the grenade," before he threw the grenade, okay, maybe then you can call it a frustration and what happened, not what it ended up being, because then, yeah, it's just building this false tension where then it takes Bulkhead going, "Guys, Miko, really?"
And
two of them to be like, "Oh, yeah."
All this having been said, I did love the moment of Predaking at the very last second just tail-flicking that grenade out of the way.
Yeah.
Because that was some great, like, hey, Predaking is maybe smarter than you think. Or he's insanely lucky. I don't know. There's something I really want to talk about, but I'm gonna wait and see if it comes up. But I'm looking forward to seeing if Ultra Magnus gets to survive this season. That's my big thing about Ultra Magnus.
I could maybe see them setting him up to kill him.
Because, well, Ultra Magnus and Shockwave both feel like the two characters that I don't want to die that are going to get killed off, because that's what they do. And I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that expectation get red herringed nice and hardcore. Like, you guys have set me up for it now. Now do the cool, surprising thing and don't kill the characters I'm interested in. Hey! Omegas. I'm curious what you're going to talk about next.
Yeah, there's a lot of points. There's one I want to talk about the most. Let's put it this way. Miko should never leave that armor.
So,
yeah.
So let me tell you guys my mental track. It's, yo, Miko, get to the, oh no, Starscream caught you. Oh, hey, Miko, you're doing it. You're going to get up there. Dodge his hand. Why are you jumping off? And then she lands on the Apex armor, and I see it start cocooning, and I'm like, wait, you're really gonna? And that was actually the highlight of the whole episode for me. Because
yeah.
I was sitting there going like, oh, it's gonna turn into a cocoon around this little human being, and she'll be protected. But no, she gets to use it, and I was sitting there, and I was like, this works. This is right. This is what is supposed to happen. Yes, good. And I was having a really good time watching that.
Well, I like that it's another time of Cybertronian tech working just fine with humans. Mm. And then also the fact that, like, the Apex armor didn't make her Starscream-sized, but it made her maybe Bumblebee-sized.
Yeah.
was trying to take on that. So maybe if she was smaller, but at least Bumblebee-sized makes her competitive. I don't know. I was kind of flipping back and forth in my thoughts for that, but
I just like how she kept throwing, like, literally just drop kicks. Like, that's
right. Yeah,
that's the Miko fighting style. Like, if for some reason she'd been fighting like a little tiny Rumble or Frenzy.
It's drop kicks. I came to the idea of like Hulk slash Drunken Master.
Right.
Because she had some, like, slip dodges in there that were pretty cool, and then otherwise it was just, like,
well,
jump, kick, keep going.
Yeah. What you saw in there were all the fights she snuck out to watch culminating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now she can actually dodge and predict them, and mean in between pro wrestling drop kicks and shoryukens.
Mm-hmm. No, the whole fighting style was marvelously in character when they could have just had her like overhand clobbering everything. Like that's what I was expecting when that fight began.
Oh yeah.
And
but it's weird. I told this to a friend of mine, and he made the Gundam comparison, where the little kid gets in the suit and suddenly, you know, they're the one that controls it the best.
Ah, that's right. I saw that as a reply to someone saying, tell me the story of Gundam, on one of my social medias the other day.
The little Asian kid can pilot the robot suit better than anyone?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that before. But it's true, and it works, and... You know what? If it puts that enthusiasm to good use and it keeps her from getting killed because she's going to sneak out anyway, you know, put some straps on it, let her wear it in like a backpack.
Yeah, that's the thing. The one caveat that came with how much I enjoyed that scene is, like, I was sitting there and I was like, I know it's the nature of this show, but please don't back down from what you have just begun. Mm-hmm. Like, I won't be surprised if we get a quick scene of them explaining why she can never use the Apex armor again. Because something. But if that happens, man, what a wasted opportunity.
Hey, yeah. You know what? If Smokescreen got to keep his little phase shifter this whole time just because he could use it really well, I don't see why they'd take that armor away from her.
And the upside...
It causes biological problems that puts too much of a strain on her.
It causes biological problems for anyone she's punching.
Well, yeah. I was wondering, like, how does the interface work? And I was like, that could be a conceivable out. Is like, oh, it's going to jack through your spinal cord and you will be a chip chase whenever you're not wearing it. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, at the next episode that it shows her, she's messed up because of it. CNA feedback, not accessing her DNA the right way.
But hey, if that
and
doesn't
then it turns
happen?
Out she's not from Japan, but really a protoform from Cybertron animated twist.
Yeah, that's right. Her,
but
turns out her mom is Japanese.
So this has gotten us close enough to the question I want to ask you two.
Uh-huh.
Is Miko bragging at having taken down Hardshell when Starscream talks about taking out Cliffjumper, or is she just throwing throwing Starscream's words back towards him?
Oh, I think she's bragging. I think that she's hearing, because it's kind of like I believe it's intentional, the whole thing. And whenever Starscream's in a corner, he brings up like, hey, I killed this one guy.
Yeah, because I think that's like the third time in even this season that he's mentioned that he took out Cliffjumper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No,
so this is a hefty thread in the Prime Forum right now of people thinking that Miko's being a silly braggy Miko, and the other half saying no, she was just throwing Starscream's words kind of back at him, where he's like, yeah, this, and no. She's like, yeah, whatever, I took out one of your bad dudes too, that don't mean anything.
Yeah, I don't see it so much as bragging, because there's no smirk or smile to it. There is nothing but the attitude and the heat of the fight.
Yeah.
I think it's mutual trash talk. It's like, he says this, yeah, well, I'm... Like, I think there's, like, a certain bit of bragging to it, because it's also the reason why she's there, mm-hmm. is Wheeljack is citing that, is like, this is why this kid's a wrecker. And, yeah. So I think there's, like, a little bit of a sense of braddocio or pride or whatever, but... I mean, because I don't think it's mutually exclusive. It is also definitely a retort to Starscream's fallback.
Oh, yeah. The nice thing about it is, really, in the course of the show, Miko's the only one who has a retort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's really the only... She's the only one that could have thrown it back in his face. And it doesn't sound like bragging to me, because even after the fight, she's not like, did you see how good I did?
Yeah.
You know, can I keep it? No, she's still... You know, her mind's still on the mission.
Yeah, well, I guess I mean bragging in a looser sense than, like, outright, like, look at how great I am. It's just, like, it's a sighting of credential is what I mean.
Right.
But in that particular,
but
like...
It's not like, she is proud of the fact that she has contributed to the Autobots, but it's not like she's nana-nana boo-booing.
Yeah.
Right.
She's doing it, I think she's doing it kind of the same way Starscream does it, almost.
Yeah.
As, like... No, I'm also stone cold. And yeah.
Except she's one that I can actually take as being Stone Cold versus Starscream, who, and again, it's, you know, she took out Hardshell. Granted, she was inside of a ship, but she's also made of meat versus Starscream, who took out a chained up, disarmed, beaten up Autobot, and he flogs that every chance he gets.
Yeah.
Versus her that was like, no, I shot a missile at what may have well hit one of my own dudes to take out your big bad.
Yeah.
I also liked it.
She's got the better kill a little to me.
I also liked it because it was like one of the most, it was like one of the ultimate, like, castrations of Starscream's lingering ability to be macho about anything.
Right.
Because this is like, this little human girl is like, yeah, well, I murdered an Insecticon. And I kind of, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about Starscream. I'm sure we can actually talk about him a little bit at this point, now that we're six episodes in. And whatever it is that he's become, I thought that kind of lent itself well to the current path he's on.
Mm-hmm.
For better or for worse, for Starscream fans. My big question about this now is, so I was already kind of championing, like, I want an Apex armor toy. Now what I'm also saying is, I want an Apex armor toy that can be displayed as being worn by Starscream, RC, or Miko.
It's like head swap, and like upper body.
I think it should be a socket that you can kind of just like put RC or Starscream into, be it, you know, whatever size figure of them that they decide to mm-hmm. go for, but make the built-in cockpit filler Miko. Like, have her be the default, and then if you have the toys,
like the sticker that's in the back of it.
No, yeah, but have it as, like, a little, like, physical figurine or something. As the filler piece.
Yeah, well, that little mini that she had with the two, yeah, with the entertainment pack.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the mold already exists. There you go. Now, to further the previous point, I saw it more as, like, she had these, like, really good, like, action movie one-liners going.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's like your dream come true.
Like,
oh yeah, well, yeah. Which is why it doesn't come off as bragging; it just kind of comes off as confidence more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Your first line at the start of that fight, you know, Starscream's kind of lording over the armor, going, you know, even the strongest armor can't protect the weakest of creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It protected you, didn't it?
Yeah,
love that line.
That was a great punch.
I liked that because I was also sitting there going, like, man, it's kind of cool, but kind of freaky. They're letting Predaking just, like, toss her around a whole bunch.
I know.
And then, like, for
that
a second,
was such great ragdoll, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so worried they were just playing it. They were going to play it for laughs because she, as soon as she got the armor on, just instant Predaking ownage.
Yeah. And I like that, you know, it struck me more as, like, she's just badass enough that when given a tough enough exoskeleton, she's just like, whatever, dragon toss him around. I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
It felt like everything I've liked about the idea of Miko kind of coming to fruition in a way that I now doubly hope doesn't get regressed somehow, either by, like, nullifying that to being a, like, I don't want this Apex Armor Miko thing to go away. It's too good an idea to erase.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're made to be together.
Yeah. And I never considered it. And I love that the show considered it and did it. It felt almost like, you know, in this final season, like it was like a kind of thing that would happen as, like, a nod to all of our viewers who have stuck it out this long. We're going to put Miko in, like, the Apex armor. Like, I felt rewarded for my viewership almost.
Yeah, I almost feel like that's going to do more for her. How do I phrase this?
She'll get the most out of it, I think.
Well, yeah. What I was going to say is, this is probably what's going to raise her stock in the fandom.
Well, that's my question. Yeah. How did people react? Because I saw it, and I was enjoying it, but I was like, this is probably making some people furious.
It's a little bit of both ways. There are a lot of people that are like, hey, you know, at least it seems like her exuberance at wanting to be in the fight and her aggressiveness now has a vent, kind of.
Yeah.
Where she's getting to do something with it, and other people going, Mary Sue. And I can understand the Mary Sue a little bit, but it seems like at least it was something that flowed well, rather than, you know, it worked well.
I think
you know,
she would be...
Starscream had the armor on to deal with the Predacon. And then the drones called him on it, and he, to save face, took it off. Miko stumbled onto it. Turns out it works. And bam, it works, and it gets her in armor and kicking butt and really showing that she's a wrecker.
Yeah.
So it works, but there were a few people that were just like, oh, this is so obviously set up. And it's like, what?
I mean, I don't think cartoon? It's I don't think it's Mary Sue-ism. It could potentially become it if she suddenly also becomes like the star of the show and whatnot. Yeah. She needs to do personally, I think she would need to do a lot more than just this to suddenly become a Mary Sue character.
Yeah, becoming a robot and marrying Bulkhead comes to mind.
Exactly, if that happens...
Don't give ideas, don't.
I will be the
have
first...
Have fun, moderator.
No, don't worry, someone already did it on DeviantArt, I have links. It's NSFW, but it's still pretty artistic.
No.
CNA. Yeah, I want to see a... I want to see a figure made of Miko in the Apex armor. I almost feel like it was set up in a way to allow for Hasbro to do one, even whether or not they do. Like, it was such an awesome, like, an obvious way. Like, it filled in the gap. I was like, this is how you can do the Apex armor without having to make it character specific, because you just put Miko in it.
Yeah,
I mean, like, robot character specific. I don't know.
No.
I really enjoyed that.
Mm.
That was going to be my next big talking point, because that's what I was so excited to talk about.
I champion Miko, so there you go. It's mine.
Yeah, and I went from championing Miko to kind of getting tired of her, and I'm back on board. I'm on the Miko train. I want to talk about Predaking's little flashback when he saw the eyeball. Because that looked like he was remembering himself.
Yeah.
So was that...
if not himself, another... Dragon.
Yeah, because there's been a lot of people comparing that to, I want to say, Skystalker.
Yeah, I think it, I think the head,
blue one.
Yeah. I think the head looks a lot more like Predaking, but the wings do look like Skystalker. Because they're more squared off and rectangular.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the thing where I think it's a real easy bit of the episode to almost glaze over because it happened so fast. But I was like, this feels like the seed that I was hoping to see laid for, you know, how Predaking will develop, how he will become the Predaking of the Predacons, as it were, which I'm sure is a line we're going to hear somewhere down the road, possibly spoken by Optimus Prime. So yeah, do you guys think? Because I hadn't looked at the wings close enough. I thought it was him remembering the life of his non-clone existence, he's a clone of.
I was thinking it was maybe that, or him remembering that one. I didn't think to pause and look and see exactly who that one was looking like, but I was thinking that was like scent memory and remembering who. Or maybe just what that one was.
Yeah.
Because he definitely shows, that was one of my bullet points, he definitely shows that he's not the stupid, dumb beast that Starscream keeps trying to write him up to, because he's, you know, responding just fine. You know, Megatron says, oh, forget about trying to hunt down the human and you know, let the beast bring it back and you take care of them. And so he stops messing with the human and walks over, picks up the fossil and flies it home.
You know?
So it's not a case of this is a big dumb beast. It's a, I'm not going to deal with Starscream because I don't have to.
Yeah. It's the first vestiges of the hopefully growing intelligence we'll see over the next, I'm hoping the next couple episodes.
Yeah.
I really don't want to, unless they got a celebrity voice actor, I'm hoping that we have Predaking evolving before the finale three episodes.
Yeah.
As much as they are an obvious place for it to happen, I think it'd be more interesting to at least have one episode of pre-King Predaking.
Yeah.
Because I was watching this one, and I was actually sitting there going, like, because I was imagining in my head, like, okay, so this thing's a robot dragon. It's probably going to eventually turn into a robot.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there and I was like, because of the mask thing, I was like, is he going to scan an Autobot? And then so I was staring at the Autobot, at the Autobots, and I was like, who looks kind of like Predaking's robot mode? And I couldn't figure it out. I was starting to think like maybe Ultra Magnus, And then I was carrying that a little bit too far. But this whole thing of him like clearly not only having a far higher intelligence than what. I mean, it was clear the moment Starscream had that line in the opening four episodes, like, what a dumb animal that can't even talk, that was going to be thrown over on its head. Right. But I like the way that they're showing it through this. I guess the scent memory is a great way to put it, whether or not it's actually smell. Right. I'm hoping we see more of this and more sooner than later.
Right. The other thought that I had just now, actually, that maybe the long game of everything to kind of excuse everything else getting drawn out is that maybe in the end the Predacons go rogue, do their own thing, and there's just like a either the final bit is Autobots and Decepticons have to come together for that lame ending, or the Autobots and Predacons are able to come to their own individual truce because they don't have any beef with each other.
Mm.
You know, they're only doing what Megatron's saying because they have to in order to get their ranks back or something. I don't know. That's kind of out of the norm wish listing, but maybe.
I mean, my objective hypothesis is the Predacons probably will not survive the three-parter as an ensemble. But personally, I don't know if I'd want to see the Predacons. I don't know if I'd want to see any kind of faction truce. Like, I almost we had this with Mech for a little while. I'd rather just see like a third faction and no one comes together to deal with them. But dramatically, the easier solution is that we soft form the conflict into two factions through uniting two of them.
Yeah.
That is more likely probably what's going to happen if they don't just murder the Predacons.
I'd really prefer to see something of a three-way conflict with the Predacons being the biggest threat and not a real alliance, more along the lines of Autobots and Decepticons both realize there's a bigger problem here, but they're going to go about it in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm still. I mean, I think it helps that there's only like seven episodes left.
Right.
But I'm. There are seven episodes left, right? Yeah, I'm counting this right.
Yeah, I think so. If I can math.
Yeah. So I'm happy that there is not potentially a huge wall of filler to get through. To see some of this hypothesizing and speculation come to fruition either way. But yeah, I want to know, especially knowing that Predaking was added in after the fact. I almost wonder if his development is going to be a very tangential like thing that happens almost on the side of the rest of the overarching plot. Like this episode, he felt more tied into the show, than he did in the opening three-parter or four-parter.
Well, especially in kind of reviving for the episode.
Yeah, like it,
which I'm glad that it was something that he kind of did on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's also like his returning sense or whatever.
His autonomy is being displayed more clearly as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He's not just driven. He's his own dude.
Mm-hmm. And one other little topic I wanted to talk about that relates to Predaking is I really enjoyed the kind of goofiness of this whole thing that led up to Miko getting the Apex armor of Starscream being put in charge of Predaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my next big point.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And the solution of the Apex armor made me grin because I was worried the Apex armor was going to be lost to the vortex of forgotten plot devices. To seeing him put it on and walk out there and going like, all right, we're going to sort this out. I was chuckling.
Yet another one that Smokescreen should have grabbed on his way out with the Forge.
See, yeah, when I rewatched the four-parter, I was also like, wait, I forgot that he was in a room with all those things. Like, why didn't he? I think we talked about it, but I was like, why didn't he go back and just...
That's why he's still the rookie.
Yeah.
Throw the armor on and then pick up the hammer. Yeah. And you're not dragging it all the way back.
You don't even have to put the armor on. Just carry. It's the size of a plate. Just carry it under your arm.
You know, well, no, you put on the armor that way. You got the armor and the face shifter on the armor.
Yeah.
Just walk through, hold it with the... Because then you're big. You got the hammer over one shoulder, the...
Star Saber on the other.
The Star Saber on the other shoulder, and just like, what are you going to do? You're phasing right through.
And just, like, throw some chains around Arachnid's pod, just, like, drag that behind you.
Nah, forget her. Everybody else has.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, we were going over this, but, like, how did he get down from the ship with that big hammer if he has to drag it all the way back? And if he had the armor, that'd explain everything.
Just kind of hop down.
Yeah. This is one of those high, especially with it being the Apex armor, and them literally showing how small it can shrink down to. It was one of those moments of, like, in hindsight, I'm even less merciful on the weirdness of Smokescreen only carrying one thing back with them. But yeah, the taming of the Predaking sequence was an amusing little aside. And I'm wondering if that's going to be Starscream's new, like, role in the show, is almost the not fully comedic, but somewhat amusing dude who's supposed to be in charge of the dragon.
The thing is, though, I see that going away very rapidly just because it doesn't need to be there. It needed to be there for this episode to get the Apex armor to the end.
Yeah.
If the next episode flows the way we're thinking it will, I don't think the Predacon will even come into play.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, if this
because
is another...
because it showed knockout
and RC and our human adults. Yeah. So yeah, it looks like we're setting up for a third congruent episode here.
That's why I'm all these things I'm saying. I'm pretty much saying, like, after this next episode, I'm hoping to see, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Starscream, yeah, I don't expect that. I don't expect it to really go beyond this episode, just because that was really the source of laughs in this one.
I see it as, like, it's the easy way for them for Starscream to be kept busy and out of everyone's hair.
Yeah.
It's like, just give him the dragon, Shockwave, tell the dragon not to kill him.
Although, I mean, for all that Shockwave did, what does he get as his final prize? Just stay in the lab.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's logical.
Yeah, well, it does have its logic in there, but it's like, okay, well, you're still a force out in the field, and when we needed you, you were there, but stay in the lab.
Yeah, I took that as more like, even though you were able to hold off, like, two or three Autobots on your own, you're the only one who knows how any of this stuff works.
Yeah.
So right. We can't put you at risk, at least until someone else knows how to fix up this stuff.
And don't get deaded.
Yeah. You're in the Dreadwing seat. Don't be a Dreadwing. I brought that one up, right? So Aaron, you're next in the lineup here, I think.
That's I think that's kind of run through. Couple just fun little side things. Bulkhead broke up the band for the Battle of Thunderhead Pass when he joined Prime. So IDW nod.
Yep.
Love that.
And then the other fun little thing was Wrecker's rule number 17, guards never look up, which of course then leads to a rock fall.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
But
I like the idea that the Wrecker rules are all written so Wreckers can more easily die.
Yeah.
Guards never look up, guard looks up.
Well, it wasn't necessarily that the guard looking up is what it was. It was just after quoting said truism, then you do something to cause the thing to go horribly wrong.
Ruined it all.
Yeah.
Omegas, I think I know one other thing we could talk about, but I'm curious if you have anything else on your list.
Unfortunately, I think those are the last two little bits I had. The only other thing that... the only other thing that didn't come up is I love how Starscream's Armada sees through his BS now.
Oh, yeah. They're like, take it off. Yeah, I wanted to stretch anyway.
Well, it's getting hot in here.
The question I had was, what do you guys think is going to be up with Wheeljack? That was a... I was expecting the heartwarming... Ultra Magnus and Wheeljack make up immediately at the end of the episode where they're at each other's throats thing. And so having Wheeljack just take off on his own, and the reasoning also being so, like, interesting of, like, I just want to remember this how it was. Bye-bye. What do you guys think's up with Wheeljack? Are we going to just have a break from him for a bit, or do you think they might follow his solo thing?
Again, we know the next episode is going to be him. There's going to be not him. But beyond that, I don't see them spending an episode on him being away. Maybe there's part of an episode's beeline is Bulkhead or maybe even Optimus Prime trying to get Wheeljack back because we need every Beast Hunter we can get.
That's what I was thinking. It was like some kind of like parallel subplot of just like what he's up to or someone's going to look for him. Like,
yeah.
Do you think this is getting him just off screen for a bit, or do you think this is just going to be another branch of storytelling? That's what I'm thinking.
I really think this is just to play up the tension between the Autobots and Ultra Magnus, who's now suddenly, you know, he walks in and suddenly he's second in command and far more strict than they've been used to.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of strife amongst the Autobots on top of all the other new challenges they've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. This also means that next episode there is another talking point of like a piece of Ultra Magnus conflict is he's caused one of their dwindling number to leave.
Right.
And I'm saying all this with the total knowledge that I believe I talked about something similar when Bulkhead was coming out of his coma and was all damaged and couldn't walk very well. Mm-hmm. And it was all kind of just fixed overnight.
Yeah.
So the episode after the next episode will start with just Wheeljack driving and go like, all right, I'm over it. What's up?
I don't know. My brain momentarily had the what if other way flip. What if we end up with the thoughts of Ultra Magnus getting fragged? In the like old bad way of you toss a grenade in the dude you don't like's tent and get rid of a problem that way.
I wonder. Wheeljack throwing a grenade in his tent?
Yeah, well, I don't see Prime doing something like that, but I'm saying just kind of outside of everything, you know, you have this new guy that's come in that's messing up the flow for no reason, seemingly, other than to show that, no, now I'm the guy that you're supposed to be paying attention to. Forget everything else that's gone on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a momentary brain ooh, what if that totally won't happen.
It's a funny mental picture. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess the last real bit of discussion about both these episodes is just like, did you guys like them? I just realized we never really ended a point on Project Predacon about that. So these last two episodes, like, did you guys enjoy them? Do you feel they might have been like either of them? Did you feel they were on? Do you think they might have been a bit weak? Do you think they might have been strong? Like, I'm curious.
I think it's a case of I liked the episode, but maybe not necessarily the results of the episode. I don't like where Ultra Magnus is headed personality wise, which is probably why I just had the kind of brain fiction of him getting killed by one of his own dudes.
Yeah, if you're gonna murder the character I love.
Yeah, well, it's because the difference, like I said, the IDW version of this character that I like is this way because he's like the trying to be the ultimate good guy cop type thing. I mean,
we haven't yet had that look into this Ultra Magnus's mind yet that we have had with the IDW one, but there's still room for that. Like,
yeah, but instead, like I said, it just seems more and more as I see it, it seems as if he's just the dude that's coming in to be a jerk and don't you know who I am type of personality, and that is a personality that personally I don't care for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prove yourself by your actions and the things that you do, not because you're Ultra Magnus. And yeah, okay, I get that he's had history with the Wreckers, but unless this history was last week, a whole lot has happened since then, and maybe it's time to figure out how the world has changed versus just come in with your, this dude walked out and screwed things up, you know.
So your expectations not quite being met with the Ultra Magnus character.
Yeah. But again, it's also expectations I only brought upon myself with hopes of him being IDW Magnus.
Well, I would not say you're entirely to blame, because I feel they went out of their way to drop some lines in his debut that would really clearly make it like, yeah, we're this. There's going to be parallels to the comic book version.
Yeah,
like it's. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but to me, it seems pretty clear that at least a similar character Bible entry is being used for both of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the to have expectations based on the comic book one, I would not say you're at fault. I didn't have those expectations myself, because I was like, to me, the comic book Ultra Magnus is also the result of some very good writers getting to take their time with him. And
yeah,
this one I had, unless there was a lot of IDW side briefing, I was thinking, I don't know if he's going to become, I don't think he's going to become what we have in the books, but he could still become something else.
Yeah.
But to Ultra Magnus aside, like, how do you feel about the season so far?
I hope that the next episode is the end of any scavenger hunt. Like I said, I definitely, with beast hunters being used over and over in dialogue, feels like there's a producer or some executive with his thumb on a sticky note, or maybe just he has a copy paste macro of, hey, use beast hunters somewhere in here. Okay, we get the idea. They're beast hunters. Granted, this is going after kids, but it also has Beast Hunter's logo that throws up right on the front. We don't need to see it all the time. Yeah. Saying it with a wink and a nod, which I think the way that Beast Wars, the TV show, did it once or twice, that's good. That's okay. But it's not like every episode was, oh, now we've got another Beast War because they're going after another beast in this war.
Another chapter of the Beast Wars.
Right. You know.
It's putting the in front, I think, that...
Right.
That makes or breaks it. All right. Omegas, what about you? How are you feeling about these last two episodes and where we're at in season three?
Project Predacon for me was more or less just an establishment episode. This is going to be the vibe. This is what we're going for. This is our new scavenger hunt for the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sample it. Take it for what you will. Enjoy it or not. This is what we're going for. It wasn't a bad episode. Nothing really offended me. I liked the fights that they were presenting, and a lot of the little moments made me laugh. But that was just there. You know, it's not an episode that offended me, nor did it do anything huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Chain of Command is my favorite episode of Prime, period. That episode was just fun.
It hit the marks?
Everything. Well, from Starscream and Predaking to Miko with the armor, the fight scene, the Wreckers versus Predaking, and the little bits of development, it kind of made me realize, you know, I don't mind the scavenger hunt storylines. Yeah, they rely on it a lot. At the same time, it's the overarching storyline I'm more concerned about, and I like where that's going, with the Decepticons gaining huge advantages while the Autobots are still kind of piecing their structure back together, especially with the new introduction of Magnus, now Wheeljack's departure. It's setting up for a finale that should be really, really strong overall.
Yeah.
But beyond that, the episode, so I really don't mind, that as kind of the structure of the episode. The content is what made it for me, and the content was just fun, from dialogue to action to just some clever ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really enjoyable.
Yeah, I guess where these hunts get nervous to me is the fact that many times it ends up being, oh, look, we're looking for insert item. You, and you go fight, and then the bad guys do the same thing, and it's not, you can have character growth in that, but it would be better to have other things causing that than the exact rote.
Right.
This thing, it it definitely makes it seem much more formulaic, and then kind of makes you see through the formula and go, ugh.
It's one reason why I like these simultaneous episodes they use, because it mm-hmm. forces them to work with a smaller cast in each episode and focus a little bit closer on them. And it's one reason why you got some... It helped you get exposed to Ultra Magnus and, you know, kind of figure out where his brain is, and for better or worse, right now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it still lets you do things. You know, you present a little bit more about Bulkhead. You know, he's going... You know, you could see his turmoil in the episode as he tries to follow his new command structure but still be loyal to Wheeljack. Right. Where, you know, he's
trying
not
to protect Miko, too. There was quite a bit that was like... Yeah, you know, the lip bite of, well, we got to deal with this now.
Yeah, Chain of Command is the uncomfortable Bulkhead episode. Everything come with an, So you still had, like, it's established characters, but you still had room for development because you got to narrow in and close your focus around them for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of hoping, I'm going to be looking forward to the next one because, you know, we really haven't gotten much of Knockout in a while.
I was worried that he was just going to sort of just quietly disappear off screen for a while. And if the next episode is in the concurrence setup, then I'm happy. Because when I was rewatching those first four, I was like, yeah, there's a bunch of Knockout in this. Where did he go? And then where is he? Why isn't he in the opening yet?
Yeah, he's not in the opening. Smokescreen didn't make the opening. We have a new opening.
Yeah, I want to talk about that after we talk about our opinions, because I just realized that's a huge, well, not huge, but it's a thing you can it's our dessert, I guess, in this dinner of a podcast.
Our outro with the intro. That's us.
Yeah. Well, my own thoughts on the episodes. I don't know if I'd say it's the best in the series, but I think Chain of Command was the strongest of the season so far. Because it. As a standalone 20 minutes of television taking place in an established world, it was pretty strong. I saw, I think it was Trent Rayner had a nice quote on Twitter that I don't know if I would say it applies to the entire show, but it definitely is a vibe that I can't deny. It's a good summary, which is a lot of Prime episodes are pretty good on their own, but they're supposed to be part of a greater story that is often not nearly as good as a single given episode. And so in this case, like, Chain of Command, I think was a strong piece of television. Lots of things happened. There were multiple, like, smirk moments, multiple chuckles, a good fist pump moment. And I enjoyed it. Both these episodes I liked a lot more than the first four. I think the first four were a mixture of terribly plotting and ended on a very silly reset of the status quo to a degree. Like, it's not a full reset, but I maintain the destruction of Darkmount was silly. And it really cut the knees off of the urgency I was feeling about this season. I a great way to relate this is when I was watching, me and Kryn watched all six of these episodes last weekend, and at one point she said, "Wait, they have a base again. What?" And I said, "Oh yeah, they got another base." And she said, "How?" And I said, "I don't know. I think Fowler gave it to them."
Yeah, that's Hangar E.
Yeah, yeah.
Is their base, because that was Fowler's door that got bashed in with the bash ball.
Yeah. So there's a certain degree of, I don't think the status quo has been fully reset, but there was definitely, there was a large step back after a large step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not yet gonna sit here and just fist pump the idea of, yes, season three, more Prime, let's go. Like, I'm enjoying bits and pieces as we go. The last two episodes had merit on their own, and I liked watching those two a lot more than the first four. And I'm hoping that's gonna be the case. I'm hoping that the first four episodes were the result of having a lot of interference on the writing end, and that everything after that is going to be smoothed out. Because the first four episodes felt like the Predacon was really stitched in, and I feel like the Predacon is far more a part of the show now. So I feel like maybe it's like the season one of Prime, where we had, like, you know, the opening five-parter and then a long break, and then a marked improvement of quality as well. And I'm hoping, like, I feel there's, it's not as big a jump in quality, but there is, I think, an improvement in the show as of these last two episodes. So I'm hoping we're smooth sailing at least up until the last bit or so, and then we see what they do. So I'm still having fun watching the show. I'm not getting mad watching it. Like I said, I'm carrying a bigger nugget of cynicism in my pocket, and I'm maybe smirking at a few things more than I would before, in a less intended way. But I got good feelings about at least the middle part of the show so far. The lack of wiggle room, I think, has been a boon, and I feel like the writers have, at this point, it feels like they really locked in, like, all right, now we know what the big man in the suit wants us to stick in the show, and it feels a lot smoother overall.
Yeah.
So that takes me to the opening. Man, they changed that opening music. They added a drum track. They literally just added a drum track.
They did that from the start of the season, didn't they?
I didn't have that. Oh, you know what? Oh, no, they didn't do that in the first four.
I think they did.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I thought that we'd mentioned that before.
Nope, I'm pretty sure we didn't.
Hmm.
I'm gonna double check right now, but I'm quite sure this is a new thing.
I would as well, but that's on the media server downstairs, and it's not playing nice.
I have Dark Prime's Google Docs page open right now, so I'm spooling us up to the point of the opening. But yeah. I think it's funny that that is literally the only difference in the music. I like the new opening, but I'm still amazed at who's not in it. Especially with Shockwave and the Predacon getting stuck in there. I'm kind of like, okay, where's Knockout? Where's Soundwave?
Yeah, Soundwave and Knockout are the ones that are the strangest to me, just because they are such mainstays now. They're, you know, they're permanent cast members, and they're still not around. Smokescreen and Wheeljack, I kind of get, because the Autobot segments of the opening are so structured. I don't see where you could wedge them in without making it too busy.
Yeah. It also makes me worried that Knockout and Soundwave may actually... I'm getting worried that they just won't get their day. Like, that they're going to be permanently relegated to the B-side of the cast.
Well, it's Soundwave for me, because someone described it. This is another weird reference to bring up to make this comparison. And I was listening to how someone referred to the cat from Red Dwarf as the character who doesn't get to do a lot, but usually gets to do the best things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how Soundwave is for me. You know, when we do see him, he's the most efficient Decepticon, he's the most reliable one, and he always seems a few steps ahead, like using the ground bridge to get the fragment, because, you know, that's the fastest way to do it. It's sneaky, it's quick, it's clean, it's efficient as hell. I thought that was a really cool, clever moment for him.
I must apologize, I scanned them real quick. Episode 1 added the Beast Hunters tag underneath Prime, and it wasn't until episode 4 that they had updated it, including Shockwave in a split-second view.
I was about to say, I'm going to play Rebellion's opening.
Yeah.
And that's the normal original opening. That's Yellow Bumblebee.
Yeah.
It
has Black and Yellow Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Even with the toss Raph into him inside the old base.
Yeah.
But color swapped, and then there's, yeah.
This is so not in continuity now.
Yeah. But I had a thought, and Aaron knocked it right out of my brain. Omegas, sorry. What were you just saying?
What was I saying?
Yeah.
I was referencing Red Dwarf and Soundwave actually being the most efficient.
Yeah, my worry is I feel like with the direction that Season 3 has been made to go, which as a direction is fine, I feel like it's robbed Soundwave and possibly Knockout of their moments, like the windows for their moments. Like I'm looking at where season 3 is going, and I'm starting to wonder if the time for Soundwave to do his big moment has already passed. Like if that was last season, and now we're going to just have to deal with, we're like, all the potential that I saw in Soundwave back when the show started, I am starting to wonder if it's going to remain untapped for the sake of just having the show run efficiently on its current trajectory. And I'm a little bummed out by the idea of that, and I'm certainly ready to eat crow hardcore on what I just said. But it is a worry I have this season that Soundwave may have kind of lost his time, his moment to say something. Mm-hmm. But who knows? Maybe
that'll be the last episode, just so you can say, see, there he did it.
Yeah, maybe he'll have the last word. Maybe he'll just turn around and they'll have Peter Spellos voice him. He'll just sing the Skybite song and you know, drop that's a little we, circle
that,
around.
That's
his
why
face.
We're glad he doesn't sing or doesn't talk, because all he wants to do is sing and rhyme. Like,
literally take like four frames of Car Robot's Skybite face and just put that, like, plaster that as an animated GIF texture onto the monitor face that Soundwave has, and someone make that fan art. But yeah, the new opening is kind of cool. I like the new opening as much as I think that it also forgot to put some dudes in who should be there. I don't know. Do you guys have any other critical thoughts on the new opening?
No.
It's making or breaking the show for you?
I'm good with it.
Did you prowl flip a table when you heard that drum? You're like, there's no drums in my... Ah! Aaron, give me a Prime Forum report. How did the new opening go over?
I don't know if I ever saw it mentioned, really.
Oh.
It was like, new opening? Yeah, sure, it's been there for a while. It's probably where I got my bad information from.
Of me kind of wants there to have been somewhere on the internet a massive, like, 200-page argument over the new opening.
I think it's just nice of them to actually take the effort to make a new opening when you're running so few episodes with it.
It was a pleasant surprise, because I was pretty much, I was ready. I was like, whatever, I guess that, you know, doing a new opening, it's going to cost money to make. Maybe this is just a thing that they had to budget out. Whatever, I'm fine with it. So seeing this new opening, I was like, that's a nice surprise. A little extra cherry just dropped onto my sundae. An extra piece of marzipan fell into my pot of chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
One more piece of white meat fried chicken was concealed underneath my coleslaw. I can come up with more of these if you guys want.
That's okay.
Okay. I ate at a Cracker Barrel the other day. I'd never been to a Cracker Barrel.
How was it?
It was pretty good. They had a new special on, because they have all this stuff like chicken fried chicken and southern fried steak, but they had this one thing. It was called an oven fried chicken breast, and it was so non-greasy because it was oven cooked, and it was panko breaded with, like, panko style breaded with cornflakes. Wasn't bad. Anyway, anything else you guys want to say on the record as of this episode of Primetime? The needle is dropping.
Nope.
Daniel used an exosuit that well, we might actually like him.
The needle has struck the vinyl. So, we'll be back again with more Primetime. There's a new episode in 2 days. Hopefully I will be able to get us together to talk about it, but if not, we'll just stack them. I think we'll be able to pull it off, though. I'm not going to be all over the place next week, I think. So we'll figure it out. But thank you guys for listening. I hope this has added something to your activity within the greater time ghost of watching the Beast Hunter season of Transformers Prime. Thank you, Aaron and Omegas, for joining me here, and we'll be back to talk about some more later on. There's only so many left, and then the curtain will fall upon Prime Time. What a time that will be. That will be when we all have to start marathoning Rescue Bots and then just do the catch-up podcast series.
And then get crazy excited or crazy upset that we missed BotCon.
If I'm not there, then yes, we will just have another... We'll have the Regretsy podcast about how much we... Well, you know what really stung? Is I was like, oh, they're getting Rescue Bot guys? Maybe they'll get Tim Curry. That would be an interesting thing. And then Tim Curry unfortunately had a real bad health problem.
Oh, yeah.
The other day. And I was like, well, and that killed that. Damn. Hopefully Mr. Tim Curry pulls through. He is a blessing upon the acting world, in my opinion. And with that, we'll be back with some more Primetime later on, but until then, because I forgot to do it last time, we are Prime out!
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.